came here to say who won it from the jump. Came here to say you can't get exactly what you want. Came here to say that you don't really want it with us. Yeah. We live, you know. We came here to say that you don't really want it with us. Yeah. The sports show.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? This is the Your Sports Show. While we may be down two members at the moment, we are still two members better than all the rest. I am the voice of a generation, Pete Rosato. That man right there, somewhere over in that direction, is the wise brother, Big Baby.
What's going on, everybody? What's going on?
I'm gonna steal a good nickname because you got the baritone, so I didn't wanna mess that one up.
The soul of R&B? Yeah.
The soul of R&B.
That's when I was I'm still always gonna be the soul of R&B. Let me stop playing around with y'all. I'm always gonna be the soul of R&B.
It has been an incredible sports week, including MLB opening day just yesterday around the league. We are not gonna talk about what happened in South Korea, and we will talk way more about that when the first official episodes of the Dog Days of Baseball drops next week. You heard it on our Instagram, on our social medias. Myself, Grizz, and Alphonse Stevens will be hosting the Dog Days of Baseball podcast, a new show on the Your Sports Show network of shows focusing solely on the MLB season. We'll talk a little bit about Major League Baseball a little bit later, but Dre, before we get to the sports talk, how was your week, brother?
My week was pretty good. And before we even get into the show, shout out to everybody who are now watching on Instagram. Found a way to get it. So now we are live on all social media platforms, Twitch, X, Facebook, Instagram, everywhere. So, and Facebook, of course, you know, home base for us.
So, always. I mean, we'll never be on Truth Social, so that's not ever happening.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah.
Maybe one day live on a TikTok. That might be interesting.
Maybe. I think that would be. We can get it live on TikTok soon. Possibly. We got to get a bunch of more. We got to get a bunch more followers. get live on TikTok.
Listen, but, what we should just do. I think what we should just do if one get followers on TikTok, we should create a compilation of things happening in the world and just cut it with Matt going, you got to relax.
I absolutely agree 1,000% with that. And I feel like it's such a great idea. It's like, I feel like that's an amazing idea. And Matt wanted me to add his, because if you've watched some of his new videos called, the Brooklyn Sessions, he wanted me to add a little disclaimer that we have on it. So, you know, I may have to. So, right. Again, shout outs to the whole team. Shout out to everybody watching on everywhere. You know, I kind of just did a Instagram blast and just blasted everybody. So hopefully these people come through. But Friday Night Lights edition of the Your Sports Show. I always love recording Friday nights. And then the people watching get a double dose of the Jabba Kids Network overall, because Jabba Kids podcast recorded this morning. Shout out to them.
Yep.
Your sports show is your nightcap. So
that's a good way to start your day. I know the Jabba Kids getting ready for a incredible week coming up. The Super Bowl of professional wrestling is happening next week. So looking forward to seeing all the content that the Jabba Tears podcast is going to be dropping over this week, as well as all of the people that we're affiliated with that'll be in Philly, all the people that we've crossed paths with that will be in Philly this weekend at the multitude of independent shows, at WWE. Heck, we might even see some interesting faces this Monday night at the last Raw before Mania in Brooklyn, New York, the home base. Bush right here. It's a lot happening in the next week that we're going to be seeing a lot of stuff on content. You know, Backstage Brawl's gonna have content. Jabba T is gonna have content. Your sports show gonna have content. Everybody's gonna have bunch of content. Everybody. Yeah, it's gonna be a lot over the next next 10 days, I would say almost.
Absolutely. This is the most exciting time of the year for, you know, our little orbit. Outside, you know, for us, outside of, you know, the finals, the World Series, the Super Bowl, this particular weekend, Mania weekend, is definitely something, you know, we get excited for. You know, we don't talk about it too much, but definitely, no, we do. But, Pete, I know you said we were going to talk about baseball later. First of all, how was your week?
My week was interesting. I went back home for a day. I went back home to my home away from home, back to Hogwarts University for a day. Our students took college trips this week. Mm-hmm. So our ninth graders were doing trips around the city to some of the local CUNY schools and local New York schools. Our 10th graders were split between a Boston trip and a upstate New York trip, which is the one I was on. And then our 11th graders did a down South Virginia, North Carolina trip. So we were all on the road, but I got to go back to Syracuse University on Tuesday, which was great. I haven't been back on campus in 10 years. I mean, I graduated 12 years ago. This May will make 12 years. I graduated in 2012. So this year marks 12 years, but the last time I was on campus was 2014. For an event that happened on campus. So it was good. It felt like an old jacket. You know, you put it back on, it felt like, you know, it fit just right all over again. It felt good being back up there. Some things have changed, obviously. The new buildings, the student center is completely renovated, completely redone. I was like, just don't call it that name anymore. It's not that building anymore. This is not the one we remember. But it was beautiful being back. And of course, you know, exposing my students to places like Syracuse, and we went to SUNY Cortland and SUNY Oneonta as well, SUNY New Paltz on Thursday. So being able to expose our students to the options that are out there for colleges and stuff like that is something that was really near and dear to me. Like I said, going back home was great. Got to pick up some new merch. Finally got my old, a new pair of my old Syracuse sweatpants back, you know. I was trying to get mad at Syracuse Bonnet, but they didn't have any.
Damn. I could have used that.
Yeah.
My bad for being late. Yanni's dad sabotaged me.
It's okay. Your kids sabotage you all the time.
But, nah, she thought I was going to work, right? So she shut off my alarm when it went off. Go ahead.
That's hilarious.
Listen, if Matt wasn't running on CP time, something's wrong.
Right.
I'm usually early.
He is. But I know we're going to talk about baseball later, but I see no better time to talk about baseball than now. And, you know, this particular topic is sponsored by the Dog Days of Baseball podcast, coming soon to all streaming platforms. They will also be on our YouTube and all of our social media networks. So, again, shout out to them. So, New York baseball is back, y'all. New York baseball is back. The Yankees played last night in a thriller, controversial ending to the game. But Yankees won, and the Mets, I believe, are playing now, unless they already finished.
Mets played their opening game today.
Yes, they did.
They were supposed to open yesterday, but due to the rain, opening day for the Mets got postponed against Milwaukee. They played today, lost 3-1. Starling Marte hitting the home run for the Mets today, and the Yankees won yesterday 5-4, as you said. I wouldn't say controversial fashion, but very interesting fashion nonetheless, taking it all the way to the bottom of the ninth for winning, and right now playing the Houston Astros in game two of their series, down 1-0 right now. I honestly believe that the Astros have surpassed, I think if you ask Yankee fans, the Astros have surpassed the Boston Red Sox in the level of hatred.
110%. 110%. I do not doubt it. I can see a Boston Red Sox fan right now and be like, you know what? I see a Astros fan, like I saw it today on my way into work. He took a picture next to the I Love New York sign. I'm like, what are you doing, sir? You can't do that.
Yeah, nah, it's sorry. Can't be, you know. Yankee fans, when it comes to the Astros, I mean, y'all are enemy number one right now. Boston, y'all get a pass right now.
Right. But I know, and shout out to Grizz, he made a video talking about the Yankees and you guys' potential pitching struggles since Garrett Cole is going to be out for a couple months. The question he asks is a question I'm going to ask to you first, Pete. Do the Yankees press the panic button early and just to make sure that they don't start spiraling now? But the Yankees, notoriously in recent years, have not been a great a great defensive.
We've had slow starts to the season, yeah.
Absolutely. And then you got to speed up, and then that's it. So with that being said, should the Yankees start the panic button right now?
Yeah, I don't think we push the panic button right now. And listen, I'll talk about this more on our first official episode of the Dog Days of Baseball. But I don't have the Yankees winning the division, and that's okay. Like, I am a diehard Yankee fan. I've been a Yankee fan for as long as I can remember being a fan of baseball. I don't have the Yankees pegged to be a division winner. I think far and away the Baltimore Orioles are the best team in this division, in the AL East. And I think it's a battle for second place between the Toronto Blue Jays and the New York Yankees.
I agree.
And that's going to be the big battle. And I think there are a lot of good teams in the AL this year. Texas is looking to repeat from last year. They looked pretty good last night. That clutch gene still coming in. Houston's going to be good. If we saw what they did last night, you know, they're going to be a good team. And you still got some good teams in the Central with Minnesota, Detroit, and Cleveland. You know, it's going to be interesting. But I don't think they pushed the panic button too early. It really all depends. I mean, there's a lot of question marks for the Yankees, and Garrett Cole being out doesn't help because we were already worried about is Rodon going to be able to bounce back from last year? How is Stroman going to be? Is Stroman going to be the Stroman he's been for the last couple of years, or is Stroman going to start to fall off in a Yankee uniform? What's the offense going to look like outside of Juan Soto, outside of Aaron Judge? You know, can Volpe take the next step? Can the offense stay healthy? Can Stanton and Judge and all of them stay healthy? You know, there were a lot of question marks. So I think what the Yankees need to do is they just need to play fundamental baseball. They need to be able to do what they need to do to get wins until Garrett Cole comes back, until DJ LeMahieu comes back and stabilizes this lineup. We still have Jason Dominguez that is looking to come back. We still have a lot of pieces. And if what we saw out of Juan Soto's defense in right field is anything to talk about, you know, we have a lot that can still go right for us. If I'm looking at what our schedule looks like, you know, we have four games against Houston, then we go to Arizona, then three games against Toronto. We have a tough 10 games to open the season. And then we go Miami, Cleveland, Toronto again, you know, so they're going to have to, I say, if they play 500 ball for the first 10 games of the season, maybe slightly above 500, get some wins against Miami, get some wins, hopefully against Cleveland. Try to beat up on Tampa Bay, who's not what they used to be, beat up on Oakland and Milwaukee later on in April. I think if we're above 500 at the end of April, we're in a good position because our May is kind of okay. Our May isn't that bad schedule-wise. And our June doesn't look too bad outside of a really rough middle of the schedule. We got three games against Baltimore, three against Atlanta, two against the Mets, four against you know, Toronto. So from the middle of June to the end of June is where it gets a little tough. But I think we have enough to not have to push the panic button. I would have loved for us to get Jordan Montgomery. I would have loved for us to get Blake Snell. I don't know what's going on with Yankees and not being able to sign free agents. Is it the players? Is it the team? Is it the agents? Mm-hmm. I don't know yet.
But the big bad wolf. We've always been the big bad wolf.
Yeah. It's so I don't know what it is. But...
with us, you know that.
Mm-hmm. So my question to you, Matt, is are we seeing the complete end in the dominance of the New York Yankees? And I know I'm saying this first game of the season, but this is the question I wanted to ask at the end of last season. But
they haven't fell off. They just haven't. If I'm not mistaken, when was the last time they made a run in the playoffs? Well, the last time they were in like the the final, like the championship game was what, like 09?
Something like that. Yep.
So we haven't really been dominant for some time. So is it the end of it? I think it's been the end. Mm-hmm. I think the bigger question is are we ever going to be in the frame of competitiveness to where it's believable that they can win the World Series? I think that's more the better question. Because if you ask me today, the moves that they made in the offseason,
mm-hmm.
not really conducive of them being heavy favorites for the World Series. I still see teams like, you know, the Orioles, which shocked the shit out of me. Phillies, they're still real good. Of course, the Astros, you know, if and when they're not cheating. I mean, I think past that point of, you know, the Yankees being the odds-on favorite year in and year out of being World Series favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I know the pitching problem, Grizz, you know, shout out to Grizz for that video, was prevalent in what he was talking about, but I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, Pete, I think we've been having pitching problems for like the last 4 or 5 years. You're on mute, bro. You're on mute.
Yeah, the rotation has not been as great as it could be. It hasn't been the strongest.
So, I mean, that's like beating a dead horse. We've been having problems with that for a minute.
Right. In the most literal way.
I felt like the real big problem last year was the offense. If you really want to be honest, but I felt like injuries plagued it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was more the reason. Shout out to Larry. And why are we not talking about the Rangers? Because we're talking about baseball. Shout out to because, you know, they clinched it.
We'll talk about the Rangers, Larry, when Artemi Panarin can actually, you know, do something in the playoffs outside of being just a great regular season player.
I mean, they're like the number one team in the NHL right now, if I'm not mistaken.
But that's what happens with the Rangers. The Rangers are a lot like the
Rangers.
They look really, really good in the regular season. But the Rangers and the Knicks have the same problem. They have great regular seasons, then they get to the playoffs, and their stars disappear.
Look, I'm not going to complain about the Knicks right now because they have a strong chance of winning the number two seed.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the ceiling, I'm not mad at it because we haven't been number two in the NBA since 2012. So I'm not mad about that. You're not gonna catch me complaining about the Knicks, and they're doing all of this with injury problems. So you really can't get me to complain about the Knicks right now, which is shocking. But back to the Yankees question. Dominance, they're so far removed from dominance. I think we need to focus on them being relevant, and in order for them to be relevant, like Pete said, I don't really know what's going on. I don't know if it was you or Pete. I really don't know if the culture is the same and players just don't want to come to New York no more. I mean, granted, I wouldn't want to go to the Bronx either. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. I think that might be the problem, Trey. That's honestly the problem. It's the Bronx. It has to be.
Somebody
want to go to the Bronx.
But here's the thing. And I think the problem is the word dominance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Understand that last year, 2023, was the first year since 2008 that the Yankees had the first year since 2014.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 2000, you know, the Yankees don't make the playoffs. I mean, when we're talking about the New York Yankees, I think the word dominance gets really kind of perverted because so many people are used to
perverted as
the
wild
dynasty years.
Yeah.
They're used to 96 to 2000, right?
Yeah.
And people forget that was a small 5-year window, right? We could have made the playoffs in 90. We could have gone deeper in 95. We didn't. 96, we won the World Series. Nobody expected it. We won the World Series with a team that nobody would have bet on to win the World Series against Atlanta that year. We do that. 97, the debacle against Cleveland. We get knocked out. 98, massively incredible season in 1998. We go to the World Series, sweep the Padres. Goodbye, good night, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
That was 99, another great season, right? 99, another great season. 2000, we go there, we have a great series against the Mets, you know, and we get another one. 2001, we could have won another one. The Diamondbacks were just a better team that year. That game that went to seven games, Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling, everybody. Like, that was a great series when you really think about it. Outside of the fact that the Yankees lost on a bloop single by Luis Gonzalez, that was an incredible series. But what do people hinge their hat on? The Yankees lost in the World Series. And then the Yankees didn't win another World Series until 2009. But you know what's funny? In 2002, okay, bad year, division series. Okay, we get knocked out by Anaheim, who eventually goes to the World Series. 2003, Yankees go to the World Series, lose to Florida in that World Series, the Josh Beckett World Series. 2004, we make the ALCS. Then we have a run of 3 years where we don't make it outside of the division series. Okay, we lose to Anaheim, Detroit, Cleveland. 2009, we go and we win the World Series. 2010, make it to the ALCS. 2012, ALCS. 2017, ALCS. 2019, ALCS. Like, took last year, the ALCS. Right? Now, granted, 2022, 2019, and 2017. All 3 years, we make it to the ALCS and we lose to the Astros. The Yankees have still been dominant. The Yankees have still been a relevant team. They have made the playoffs almost every single year.
Were they
favorite? Rare.
Were they favorite?
But I don't think, but see, that's the thing. That's where I think the dominant problem is the issue. Everybody thinks, and this has also been perpetuated by the Yankees, right? This is perpetuated by also a lot of teams in the NBA and in the NFL when you hear players say, well, the goal is a championship. We don't win the championship. The season's a failure. No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. How many teams win a championship every year?
We're talking about just baseball? Yeah, one.
One. One team. One team in the Major League Baseball.
One
team.
Subjective.
Right? How many teams have the opportunity to do that? Only two every year. Right.
Yeah.
Now, if we talk about the larger scope of the playoffs, right, in Major League Baseball, you're talking about what, 12 teams that have an opportunity, right, at the end of the day. When you talk about basketball, when we talk about the original eight, 16 teams out of what, 30?
Yeah.
32 have a chance. And if you get down to the championship series in each league, it's four teams. Four.
Is my
right?
Four?
So when you really think about the statistics of it, mm-hmm. and you think about not only making the playoffs year after year after year, but getting to places like the American League Championship Series, where you are one of the last four teams, right? And when we talk about Major League Baseball, we're talking about 5, 10, 15, 20, 20, 30 teams. So when you are four of the final four out of 30, mm-hmm. those odds are pretty slim. People have gotten so used to the Yankees being championship or bust mm-hmm. that's the problem. That they think if the Yankees don't win a championship, they didn't do well. No, they did great. Yeah, we won a championship. But it doesn't mean that that's the only thing that defines a team as great. If the Lakers make the NBA Finals and lose in seven games and play a great series and everybody's playing at the top of their game, but they lose on the final two possessions of the fourth quarter of the seventh game, was the season a failure? No, it wasn't. You got to the most minuscule of opportunities to win a championship. Not everybody's getting there.
I get it. And, I definitely understand what you're talking about. And, next week when you guys start recording, I definitely want you guys to expand upon that, because it's a good discussion. It's definitely a good discussion. So the next thing we're talking about, we're hopping over to the NFL. Sorry, having a moment. The NFL. That is new hip tackle rule. Basically, the hip tackle looks like almost every tackle I've seen before. But I know they've kind of shown what's the difference in it. Basically, when you grab the person's hip and then you do a little swivel. And you do a little swivel and you land on the person's leg. And it's like, you can hurt the person. But Matt, my question to you is, how different is the NFL season going to look this year with the new rule in place?
It's flag football now. I don't even know what we're talking about no more. It's like, I don't. All these rules just seem like they're just trying to protect the quarterback, and we're paying them all this money for them just to play safe. I don't like it at all. I might be ignorant. I don't even care at this point. It's just we're all used to football a certain way. You know what you signed up for. You know it. You signed up for the violence. I feel like CTE is something that you should pay more attention to, and that's good. But hip tackling, come on, bro. You getting mad because he ring around the rosy Jew? He swung you around and threw you to the ground?
Definitely ring around the rosy.
That's corny. I don't agree with it. I think it just, of course, they're trying to boost up the offensive play and the score to make it more exciting to watch, but it's football, bro. It's gonna always be exciting to watch. I do not need to put this much ease to quarterbacks. Tom Brady probably could have played till he was 60 with the way that these rules are coming in. It's just sad, and it's just gonna be more annoying to you guys because that means Aaron Rodgers is not retiring no time soon.
right, but.
We started the hip tackle. We started the hip tackle because it was a way to get away from making, helmet-to-helmet contact. It was a way to get away from, the
face mask, horse collar,
the spear tackles, all these different things.
I miss the spear tackles forever.
Yeah, like we said, okay, those aren't safe, so we developed the hip tackle. Mm-hmm. And now the hip tackle isn't safe. Because of the way the neck torques and things. And then I get that, right? I understand that. But football is a violent game. Mm-hmm. That's what it is, right? And you know what you're signing up for, You know the risk involved before you walk in, right?
Absolutely.
If I go skydiving, I know the risks involved. I sign a waiver that says I know the risks involved.
Chose all these things, right? Skydiver, you're wild.
You know, But it's true, right? Like,
all
right, hold on.
Yeah, no, he's right. I just like
skydiving beat. Come on, like you're not from the Bronx. Come on.
Listen, I'm from the Bronx. J-Lo isn't. Don't get it twisted. Okay.
That's crazy.
But let's put it in a way that we'll all understand right now, right? When you ride the MTA nowadays, you know the risks involved.
That's better.
Man, see, the crazy part about that is, and I'm not going to go on a tangent about that, but the MTA has always had a level of danger to it, right?
I was just about to say security. I've never
I've never felt secure on the subway. But the problem now is the fact that the mayor is demonizing the subway, has demonized the subway so much, and now we have all these cops with nothing to do. Just to be in a subway bothering people.
Oh no, you got all these cops that ain't
not even bothering. They're not even doing nothing.
They're not doing anything. Why? Because you got a serial snuffer walking around.
Yo. Just wow.
Bruh. Just, if I see the serial snuffer, I gotta bow.
You got a dude walking, just taking the train, just getting up in the morning, like, who am I molly whopping today?
That's wild. I'm gonna need you to relax.
Okay. No, literally.
No brother love. That was bad.
Nah, Molly Whopping isn't.
No.
I don't know who this man is, but I'll tell you right now.
Molly Wop, bro.
Listen, I don't know who this man is, but I tell you right now, I know who his idol was growing up.
I thought they caught him.
Nah, that's another one. But I'm gonna tell you right now, I know who his idol was growing up. I know damn well that man idolized Homie the Clown.
That's what he looked like. But
out here, the thing, it's like you know the risk involved when you play football. You know right. What it is. You know what you signed up for. You know, and the sad part about it is, unfortunately, we watch it for the car crash.
Yes. Exactly. When I go on YouTube and I look up videos, I look up for the best hits. Like, I don't look for the best catches, you know, I look for the best hit. Who made you drop the ball?
Everybody want to get mad in the hit stick. We love that.
Hit stick. That was it. Right? So now Maddie got to take out the hit stick because it's too dangerous.
I won't buy that game. I'll tell you that right now. You take away
but the hit. I know you're in the middle of it, Pete. I just want to make a point because after slide in a second, Matt, you're signed in, right?
Yeah.
Okay. but my point about this is, I think the league is gonna look really silly for this year with people getting 15-yard penalties and automatic first downs every play. It's going to change the way these players have to play again, and I don't personally like it. Just like how everything is a roughing the passer call. I remember that when they fixed the roughing the passer, and now if the wind blew too hard, you know, you was going down the field another 15 yards and automatic first down. Like, that's the shit I'm talking about. And like Matt said, like probably Larry would say, like, we are getting to a point where it's getting ridiculous and it's turning more into flag football than anything.
Two-hand touch. With the quarterback, you got two-hand touch from now.
Oh, yeah. You go and tackle the quarterback, you got to be like, wait, hold on. Rock goodbye, baby. And put him to sleep, lay him down gently, and you'll still get a flag.
Which is crazy because all these quarterbacks were so injured last year. That's what made it so crazy.
Injured.
Like, how?
So injured.
How?
They're so injured. Well, fellas, I'm going to go. I'm going to just be in the producer spot because, you know, American Airlines need me. But yes, I will see you guys later. Definitely continue the conversation. I will be watching. Do y'all thing. Wakanda forever. All of that good stuff.
Wakanda forever. You gotta relax.
Listen, Matt, I don't know if you heard before you got on. We said that we're gonna get all of our views on TikTok because we're gonna make a You Gotta Relax compilation. So we're just gonna play a clip of something happening in the real world or something that was said, and then it's just be like, Matt, you gotta relax.
Boy, with all the shit that's happened this week.
Listen.
It would be crazy.
You know, not Trump selling Bibles. Yep.
I saw that, right? Yeah, like, this motherfucker's selling sneakers. He's selling sneakers aren't that bad. Have you seen the sneakers?
Because he tried to get the black vote.
I mean, give everybody the stimulus check. I bet you they vote for him. Like, I guarantee they vote for him.
He's like, oh, black people like sneakers? Let me do sneakers. Like, oh, money. Wait.
And being
black people free. In the South like religion? Let me get the Bibles.
That was crazy. I heard that. I'm like,
a man out here hawking Bible or something.
Yo, I know we was joking when he lost 4 years ago. That nigga's coming back. Like, it's bad. Like, he's gonna
get back.
That man
is on demon time.
He's beating the fucking system. He's coming back.
Let's stay with the NFL. Let's stay with the NFL and go into a little thing here. Matt, we might have another Eli Manning situation. Deion Sanders recently came out and spoke about how, you know, the top two players in Colorado coming into the draft, you know, they don't want to play in certain places. They already know that if certain teams want to pick them, they're going to come back. They're not going to go play. And now, you know, we're talking about Caleb Williams as well, the number one pick, right? Does he want to go to Chicago? What's your take on this with Deion and possibly with Caleb Williams about players not wanting to play for certain teams and trying to strong arm who drafts them and who doesn't?
I didn't even hear Deion say that. That's crazy. I thought that was RG3 that said that crap. And my initial
RG3 said it about Caleb, but Deion had an actual interview where he talked about how he is advising not only his son, but the wide receiver as well.
Yeah,
like about playing for certain teams, who don't play for this team. If this team wants to draft you, say no, stuff like a whole bunch of stuff.
I mean, you gotta be real. All right, the biggest example, right, is Dan, why is his name slipping me? Because he just signed with Pittsburgh. It's similar to him because he's not a bad quarterback. He was just in a really bad.
You mean Fields?
Yeah, Justin Fields. He was just in a bad situation to where you weren't gonna progress. Not everybody has the luxury of being like a CJ Stroud who benefited in where he ended up being at, right, with Houston, and like revitalizing that franchise. It's gonna take a lot to make Chicago a contender. And so I understand why everybody's instructing Caleb Williams to do that. But I feel like now the thing is not to be drafted number one, but drafted on the account of your legacy, if that makes sense, right? Remember what the dream was, to be the number one overall pick? That's no longer the thought process, especially in the NFL. Why? Because you'll look at guys like Baker Mayfield, who we all universally feel like is trash. But could he be trash because he played for Cleveland? Because he's doing pretty good in Tampa, right? Or could it just be he's trash and he's an average quarterback and we didn't believe the hype? So I get it. It's a legacy thing, Pete. Like, and it's not wrong to think and plan that way, because we're big on what can you do for my franchise versus what my franchise can do for you.
But it's kind of a double-edged sword, because to be the number one pick or to be a top 10 draft pick, top five draft pick, you have to play really well, right? Teams have to look at you as a potential franchise cornerstone or somebody they can build around. And if you don't want to get drafted by those teams, then why are you playing as good? Right? Yeah. Don't play as good in college. Don't go show out in college. Don't go win a national championship, right? So it's interesting here because I'm looking at number one and number two overall picks in NFL history. Give me 1 second here. All right, so if I'm looking at, okay, Bryce Young to the Carolina Panthers, C.J. Stroud to Houston, right? Aiden Hutchinson to, you know, Detroit 2 years ago, Trayvon Walker to the Jaguars, right? Let's look at 2021. Zach Wilson, number two, Trevor Lawrence, number one. Trevor Lawrence, his first year in Jacksonville. But Trevor Lawrence's first year in Jacksonville wasn't great.
Yeah. But we put that more on the fact of who his coach was and the scandal that went on with that. So that's
– And then –
He pass on then, that, but
yeah. Okay, so let's look at – but you look at, like, 2019. Mm-hmm. 2019, Nick Bosa, Defensive Rookie of the Year, drafted by the San Francisco 49ers. Kyler Murray, drafted by the Arizona Cardinals, Offensive Rookie of the Year. Right.
But since then, the Cardinals, they probably made a little run 1 year. It might have been 21. Was it 21 that they made a little run and they were looking pretty good? But then Kyler Murray got injured. Was that the? But
yep.
Well, in the scheme of things, I feel like that legacy. Your whoever that is, it's Facebook. You got to write your name, but I feel like the legacy over being the number one overall pick is solely for quarterbacks, right?
For the most part, there's been few. So I think the last, you had a Jake Long, the tackle, taken by the Miami Dolphins in 2008. Eric Fisher, taken by the Chiefs in 2013. Then you had Jadeveon Clowney in 2014. And Myles Garrett in 2017, and then Trayvon Walker. But for the most part, a lot of it has been quarterbacks. You've had a couple of defensive ends, a couple of tackles. The last non-quarterback offensive player drafted number one overall was 1996, Keyshawn Johnson.
So name the last number one overall pick that was a quarterback. That wasn't a bust.
There's a lot that weren't busts. I mean, if you go back, if you look at
busts, I mean, like,
okay, 99, you had 99, you had Tim Couch. 2005, well, no, I wouldn't consider him 2000. I wouldn't consider him a 2007, Jamarcus Russell.
It was all right.
Not great, but he was all right. 2010, probably Sam Bradford. Wasn't necessarily a number one overall pick kind of player on the pro level. I consider Jameis Winston to be a bust, considering that he was drafted number one overall. And he wasn't, I don't see him as a number one type guy.
I said he was all right.
He was all right. Right.
Ass might be a stretch. Yeah. Okay.
Jared Goff is now remaking his career. I mean, if you look at Jared Goff, 2016 Jared Goff, when he was drafted, I mean, Jared Goff had some really bad seasons as well, but now Jared Goff looking really good, made three Pro Bowls in his career in the 8 years that he's been in the NFL. But when you look at a lot of these number one overall picks, I mean, the idea is that the team builds around you. And if you look at these number one picks, right? I'm going to go back to 2001 because 2001 was Michael Vick. Michael Vick made the Falcons relevant. David Carr, outside of the fact that he had no offensive line, was an incredible quarterback for Houston. Zero.
I'm just sad.
Carson Palmer was great in Cincinnati.
great. He just was there in the stretch, Pete. He was good. Great is a stretch. You got to be.
No. Carson Palmer was a great quarterback for Cincinnati. He went through a stretch of years where, unfortunately, these were the Marvin Lewis ran Bengals who could not do anything in the playoffs or make the playoffs. But he was a statistically a great quarterback. Eli Manning. Okay, made the Giants better. Alex Smith, while not a great quarterback, held down the San Francisco 49ers for a number of years.
Definitely.
Right? Mario Williams was an incredible defensive end for Houston. Mm-hmm. Jake Long was an incredible tackle for Miami. Stafford was great.
Latavia Teller? No, he wasn't.
Cam Newton. Cam Newton revitalized the Carolina Panthers after Jake DeLome and everybody left.
And then shit the bed in the Super Bowl.
Right? No, I'm just Andrew saying. Luck. Andrew Luck was great for Indianapolis.
Disappointment, right? But I can do that. Yeah.
Now you look at the number two picks. Look at the number two picks in the NFL. Zach right? 2002, Julius Peppers to the Carolina Panthers. In 2002, the number one overall pick was David Carr to the Houston Texans. Would you rather have had Julius Peppers' career, or would you rather have had David Carr's career?
Neither, but that's just me.
Julius Peppers is in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
I hear you. I would not want neither one because, yeah.
You know, then you had Reggie Bush in 2006.
Bust. Straight up bust.
Playing them Calvin cardinals. Johnson in 2007.
My man.
Right. Think about this for a minute. The Oakland Raiders passed on Calvin Johnson to take Jamarcus Russell.
They needed a quarterback, though.
You know, you look at 2010, Ndamukong Suh.
Forgot about
2011, him. Von Miller. 2012, RG3. Right? The number two picks then kind of fell off a bit.
Hold on. But do you revere RG3's career? He was more or less figured out. And I don't feel like that was Washington's fault that his career was trash. I feel like that was more, how the fuck can I explain it? That's more cockiness, right? Where you felt like he did not have to change or progress. And that's why he got injured so much, right? So oh, yeah. I don't blame Washington for RG3 being a bust. I don't blame the Jets for Zach Wilson being a bust. You know what I'm saying?
No, I blame the Jets for drafting Zach Wilson.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, this is what I mean. It's more of a, I don't fault coaches like Deion Sanders coaching his players as far as think about your legacy. If you want to have a career and a lifestyle like I had, you got to think more or less to your legacy. I don't disagree with RG3 saying that, but you had a good situation. Washington was not ass. You were. So you get those answers. It's like for you to sit there and tell like Caleb Williams, oh, you should pull a Eli Manning and decide and just tell him I'm not reporting to Chicago. Subjective. Because you saw what they did to Justin Fields. Justin Fields got sold for a can of Sprite and a promise.
So In 1988, the Atlanta Falcons went 5-11. Okay, 5-11. And
shout out to the
they had the right, and they ended up with the number 5 overall pick in the 1989 NFL draft, which they then used to select Deion Sanders. Right? You know how good the Atlanta Falcons were in 1989? They went 3-13. They went 5-11 in 1991. Right? Like, if we're really talking about, you know, Deion was great because of where he ended up going after the team he was drafted. Okay? He was in Atlanta till 93. Then he spent a year in San Francisco in 1994. And then what did Deion do? Deion Sanders just so happened to end up, okay, between 1995 and 1999, he went and he played for the Dallas Cowboys. Right? 7-year, $35 million contract. Right? Became the highest defensive player in the NFL at the time. Right? And he went and win the third title in 4 years with the Cowboys, you know. And he got a Pro Bowl selection. But look where he ended up. He went to a Dallas Cowboys team that had Troy Aikman, that had Emmitt Smith, that had a great team around him. Okay? Deion had his best season, okay, in his sixth season in the NFL when he played with the San Francisco 49ers in 1994, right? But again, look at the team that you're in. He played in the Super Bowl in 94, okay? 49ers went to the Super Bowl. He won the Super Bowl with San Francisco. Went to a Super Bowl with Dallas. Won a Super Bowl with Dallas, right? And then he went to the Washington Redskins, signed a 7-year, $56 million contract, and retired after 1 year. Okay, Deion Sanders is great because he was a fantastic defensive player in college, and he happened to play for two of the most dominant teams in the NFL in the mid-90s. Deion Sanders, and I'm going to say something that probably going to get me canceled, Deion Sanders was not a generational defensive player all himself. Deion Sanders played on really, really great teams that allowed him to be put in really, really great situations. Because I'm going to tell you right now, if you take Deion Sanders 1 year in San Francisco out,
okay,
and you take his first year in Dallas out, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He's a four-time Pro Bowler, a one-time defensive not even his only defensive player of the year gets taken off, right? And you know what his greatest moment playing for the Atlanta Falcons was? The fact that he played both baseball and football at the same time.
Deion was bigger than just his on-the-field antics. It was just the fact that he was a good businessman, like you said.
Deion was a character.
Yeah, and he was
Deion was a character.
He knew. He thought legacy. So to add on to our point, you have an entertaining quarterback, and you have a world beater receiver / safety. Because I think Travis Hunter plays more than one. He plays both offense and defense, but they're gonna be high. They're gonna be highly touted when they declare for the draft. So it's like, yes,
but your legacy is making a bad team good about being a cornerstone. No. That's what these guys were. I mean, Aikman went to Dallas. Barry Sanders went to Detroit. All of these guys, you know, they had no choice. And this is a problem that I have with players nowadays. They think they're bigger than the game. I didn't like it when Eli did it. I'll say it straight out. I didn't like it when Eli did it. Okay? I didn't like it when Peyton Manning did it. Right? You go where you're drafted. These teams are where they are record-wise, and they're drafting you so that you can make them better. These teams are saying, we believe you are the player that is going to be the cornerstone to making us better. And guess what? You do your first couple of years, and if you don't want to stay there, you don't stay there. You go somewhere else.
I.e. Matthew
Stafford. You don't got to sign your second contract.
I.e.
You're not locked in like it used to be.
Sorry,
and unless you're a running back that doesn't get picked first anymore, unless you're a running back, quarterbacks have super huge shelf lives. Defensive players have super huge shelf lives. If you're good, what do they always say? You're not playing for your first contract. You're playing for your second. You play for your second contract.
Unless you're in Dallas and you're going to get franchise tagged anyway. But yeah, it's just
but hey, you don't have to sign it. You don't have to sign it, right? Yeah. You don't have to sign it. Do what you want to do afterward. But you go to the team that drafts you. You play your ass off and you leave if you don't want to stay. Right. And I'm tired of players trying to overtake their agency on them. But speaking about players overtaking their agency, don't really have an agency to overtake, I should say. Yeah, did you hear about this big three offer to Caitlin Clark?
Yeah, it's laughable.
No, it's not.
It's laughable.
Why is it laughable? Listen. The WNBA does not really have the greatest. Listen, Liz Cambage signed a multi-million dollar contract to go play overseas.
Uh-huh.
You now have Caitlin Clark getting a big money offer from the big three. Uh-huh. At the end of the day, they want to be able to financially support their families, and the WNBA doesn't really do it for them in terms of salary. So is the WNBA in trouble when we're talking about these great college basketball players who are killing it in the women's college basketball tournament, you know, possibly thinking that the WNBA is too small for them?
They're in trouble if she actually signs to the big three, because they're in their year now where they're supposed to be negotiating their TV deal. And if you want more money for the players, you're gonna need that TV deal. So yeah, they'll be in trouble if she actually takes it serious and signs that deal. Which, if you're Caitlin Clark and Caitlin Clark's family, I would not think about it. What is it? Three? You said 3 million. I could have sworn it was five. I don't know. I'm bugging.
She knows $5 million.
You don't sit there and think about it because it's $5 million, and I think the highest paid WNBA player is $250,000. So I mean, yep. $5 million to $250,000 for 3 years. I'm not going to lie to you. If I'm Caitlin Clark, I'm taking that money. It's $5 million. But she probably makes that in NIL deals alone. So she's not wanting for anything. But this new crop of talent, that is going into the league, your Angel Reese's and your Caitlin Clark's of the world, the WNBA are going to need them. Due respect, Caitlin Clark is your bag. If you're every woman in the league, you're going to be in her ear like, look, we need you here. Because let's be real. Nobody's checking for the men's college basketball right now. We can't even tell you a lot of these players on this team, right?
No, there's not a lot of stars right now.
Exactly.
There's not a lot of what you would call it, off the page stars, you know. And I think, you know, it's interesting that there hasn't been a one of these like big cornerstones that we've seen in men's college basketball. Either they're not being talked about, you know. But I think a lot of people are also very, you know, with the NCAA now, it's harder because. Anybody who's in the NCAA that's there for more than 1 year, they don't really get talked about.
Yeah, yeah. I've been really into you know the women's basketball games. Like it's all stories. Like we're looking to see Iowa versus LSU for the rematch of you know last year. We're looking at that. We're looking at the beef between the Gamecocks and LSU. You know. Juju and what she's been doing, she's been balling. Like it's a lot of talent in the women's college
the funny, you know what's interesting? The top five players in the NCAA right now are all, if I'm looking at this, are all seniors.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the top six, all seniors, and they're all big guys, right? First time you get somebody who's not a senior is Kyle Filipowski out of Duke, who's mm-hmm. a 7 feet, 248 pounds, averaging 19.9 points per game and 8.3 rebounds a game. But the number one player and ranked player in NCAA is, you know, and this was in the first 25 games of the season, Zach Edey out of Purdue, who's 7'4", 300 pounds. Tyler Kolek out of Marquette, who's a 6'3 point guard.
They just lost. NC State.
Hunter Dickinson out of Kansas, who's 7'2", 260. And Jadon Ladie out of San Diego State, who's 6'9", 240. You know, who's in his third college in 6 years of playing college ball, right? And then you've got P.J. Hall out of Clemson, you know, 6'10", 238. So, I mean, it's tough. And you know what? You're going to hate what I'm going to say.
I'm not.
And you're going to tell me I got to relax.
I tell you that every day.
You know why? I don't think there's a lot of men's college basketball players getting talked about right now.
I know why. Because one and done.
Why?
One and done.
No.
Seriously? Why?
The best college basketball players right now are all white. They don't translate to the NBA audience.
You got to relax. You got to relax.
It's true. Question. How many?
I know where you're going with this. Don't do it. Don't do it.
How many?
Gray is still producing. Don't do it.
No, hold on.
Don't do it. You bring up that fat boy, I'm telling you, don't do it.
No, I'm not bringing up the fat boy. I'm not bringing up fat boy. Here's what I'm going to talk to you about real quick. Chat me up on this real quick, and I'm being dead serious, Mom. How many white players that have been top 10, top 5 in college basketball have translated to being star or starting players in the NBA?
Damn.
Exactly.
Shit, I genuinely can't name any. I think the last
one. Grayson Allen was one of the best players in college basketball when he played for Duke.
He's a role player now.
And he's at best a role player.
Yeah.
Why am I forgetting this? Frank Kaminsky was probably top 5 player in college basketball when he was playing at Indiana.
No, what about Chet?
Chet Holmgren is a rarity. That's what I'm talking about. It's a rarity. And he's playing for Oklahoma City. And how many people are actually talking about Chet Holmgren? When you in the barbershop, when you out there talking to the boys in the hood, when you out there talking to the boys on the block about basketball, ain't nobody, ain't no hood dude who watch basketball, ain't no kid in a high school classroom talking about, I want to be like Chet Holmgren.
No, nobody wants to be like Chet Holmgren, but we don't disrespect and say that he's not a good talent. Granted, he's being overshadowed by Shea, but the baddest white boy ever was Larry Bird. That's the only one I can.
The really three think baddest of. White boys in the NBA right now are all Europeans.
Yeah.
It's Jokic, it's Doncic, and it's Sabonis. Lauri Markkanen is international. Porzingis is international. Chet Holmgren is the only one.
Shit, I can't even argue with you. Yeah, those are the top three. And Sabonis right. is not a bad man. He just owns Anthony Davis. That's just the only one I can really put that on. A lot of other players have figured him out, but Anthony Davis can't seem to figure him out.
You want to talk about who's one of the baddest white boys, actual white boys in the NBA right now? Wasn't drafted very high. Wasn't talked about in college a lot.
Wait, what about Tyler Hero?
see where Tyler Hero was. Cause I was about to bring up somebody else.
He was
the 13th pick in the 2019 draft.
No, but I think he fell down because of his injuries, but
he played 1 year in Kentucky.
Yeah.
He was a Kentucky one and done. You know who's the baddest white boy that went undrafted when he got draft when he went into the NBA draft? He was undrafted. And he's a bad white boy right now.
Shit,
Austin Reeves.
All right, you got it. He got it. Because he put up 40 the other night. You got it.
But Austin Reeves is nasty, though.
He has his moments.
He's got game. He can shoot. The kid was undrafted in the 2021.
His IQ is up there. I give you that.
But that's always what we talk about, right? Ball. The white boys in college basketball don't translate to the demographic of the basketball watching fan, especially the NBA watching fan, because here's the thing. The truth is the demographic of college basketball is still more heavily white than it is black in terms of the audience. Uh-huh. The demographic of the NBA is more heavily African-American than it is white.
More international. It's more international now.
In the United States, the demographic audience for the NBA is more African American than anything. But college basketball, NCAA, is still heavily a white audience in terms of who their majority viewing public is. Man. When do the African American fan, the black fans of the NBA, tune into NCAA college basketball? When you got them big names. Them boys who are looking good, who are going to be them first-round draft picks, right? Because I can tell you, everybody was talking about Johnny Flynn and Kemba Walker and all of them. Everybody in the barbershop, Kemba Walker, you're bad, man. Yo, that boy bad. They were talking about Kyrie when he was in college. They were talking about Zion when he was in college. They were talking about all these people when they were in college. Because when those are the players that translate to the NBA demographic, they're not paying attention to the white boys. They're not paying attention to the white boys in Indiana.
They did with JJ Redick. And what the fuck was his name? Jimmer. They were doing Jimmer that. Yeah, they were doing it with Jimmer and JJ Redick. I never understood the Jimmer shit. I didn't see it. I didn't know why everybody was such a big Jimmer Fredette fan. But JJ Redick was heavily talked about.
So here's my question. So here's my question for you then.
What's up?
Do the Toronto Raptors, and I'm not talking about what we know now, I'm talking about then. Transport yourself back to 2011, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Do the Toronto Raptors get shit if they draft JJ Redick number one overall instead of Andrea Bargnani? Do the Bulls get shit if they draft JJ Redick instead of DeMarcus Aldridge? Do the Timberwolves get shit if they draft LaMarcus Aldridge over Brandon Roy? Right? Ain't nobody going to see the white boy go number one unless they're international. The closest we got was in that 2011 draft. Adam Morrison went number three.
Man, he was really touted. I'm surprised he even fell to three because – what he did from the
behind Bargnani and LaMarcus Aldridge.
So
right,
LaMarcus Aldridge had a good. LaMarcus Aldridge was just—he was 7 feet, and he was his mid-range shot was crazy. He was a good post player. He was great with rebounding, and they needed the help in Portland as far as that. That pickup, so I understood that pickup. Bargnani, yeah. Nobody really knew much about Bargnani. He was overseas. So yeah, I mean
if you the lightest dude, I'm not even talking white, the lightest dude I've seen go number one, and I'm looking back from 2008. I'm back in 2014 right now. The lightest dude to go number one was Dan Blake Griffin.
He's not white.
But he liked. I was saying the lightest dude. And Carl Anthony Towns was light when he was drafted. That's it. Ben Simmons, he's Australian. He don't count.
He's black. His father's black.
Right, you know,
like right, stubborn and ignorant black. It's crazy, like. So,
you know, when you look at some of these great players in the NCAA, they don't usually some of the greatest players in the NCAA don't translate to the NBA, and it's because it's a different game.
Yeah.
It's a much different game. There's a lot more attention put on fundamental team play, team play and fundamentals.
So
in NCAA basketball.
So you don't blame one and done's as far as why men's college basketball is kind of fell off, because you have teams like Kansas who that's their bread and butter. They pick these one and done players. And they don't build towards their team making it far as in the playoff brackets. So a lot of these players don't stay past 2 or 3 years. And the ones that stay to set like center, like to stay to be seniors, like you just listed, you said the top players are all seniors. We don't know who they are.
Right. Right? And none of them are going to go to the NBA. And if they do, they'll be role players at best.
Exactly. So it's declining because of star power. Whereas Caitlin Clark, who's literally just passing on her fifth year, to go to the league. You know what I'm saying? So you got to see her grow. The Angel Reese, she's in her senior year. You got to see her grow from in Maryland to now where she is in LSU. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, there's a story behind a lot of these players that you can sink your teeth in and get invested in. And then on top of that, the competitive edge, the attitude, it's something that a lot of the core base of basketball players have not seen since the 90s as far as men's basketball. We're now seeing it with women, and it's like, wow, that's not really ladylike, but kind of interested. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're in this women, her story era, where it's like you're seeing a lot of things that was revered in the 90s as far as the passion, the ruggedness to it, the feuds, the rivalries. You have a rivalry now with LSU and South Carolina. You know what I'm saying? Like you see that because they're so dominant. South Carolina's been so dominant, but it's like when it comes to them winning the championship, they're falling short to teams like Iowa because of players like Caitlin Clark. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then the Caitlin Clarks, who are like literally the poster child for, and what we shouldn't say, they're the poster. She's like the new great hope, not only just for women's basketball, but for women. You get right. She's the great hope. And for her to go against LSU and they get washed the way that they got washed, and then you got your Angel Reese's who's being villains of it all. It's a great story. And a lot of public consumptions, we love drama. We love rivalries. We love stories. Men's basketball does not have any stories. We sink our teams.
No, they don't.
We sink our teeth in. To when it comes to men's basketball, we sink our teeth into Cinderella stories like Clemson. That's all everybody's talking about when it comes to men's basketball right now is Clemson.
Well, yeah, because then again, there's no players that stand out. But then again, outside of Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, can you name anybody else?
Anybody else what? As far as
In women's basketball right now, can you tell me?
A lot of them I can't pronounce their name. I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm not even gonna.
No, you got. In my opinion, you got Paige Beckers in UConn, right? You've got.
Yo, whatever happened to UConn? They used to be so damn dominant. Now they're just. It's like they're falling into not obscurity because they're still kind of competitive, but they went on like a stretch where they were winning every year.
Like, I mean, they just had their 30th straight trip to the Sweet 16.
Exactly.
But you 30 straight years. in the Sweet 16.
Bertram just went on like a 17-year run where they were just winning championships every year. It was just like a foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
They were going to win the championship. UConn was that. Like with UConn, like now it's like it's not so much the women right now, it's the men, because they're the odds on favorite to win the championship this year. Even I still think it might be, you know, that's just me. But it is what it is. Shout out to
Yeah, I'm trying to
what did you just say?
Trying to find the UConn women's here. I believe they're in the ACC is no, they're also in the ACC. No, they are not in the ACC. They might actually still be in the Big East. They went 18-0 this year. They had undefeated.
UConn, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're not the odds on favorite to win. The Gamecocks are.
They got Duke. They got Duke tomorrow. You know, so it's gonna be very interesting. Where is it here? Why do I not see that? Oh, that's because I didn't go all the way down. There we go. Yep, they beat Jackson State. They beat Syracuse in a great game. I watched that game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got Duke, number 7 team in the country in Duke, and then you got USC and Baylor. I could see it being USC and Duke, USC and UConn, which is going to be very interesting because you're going to see Paige Becker, you know, probably going one-on-one against a Juju Watkins, who's incredible. You've got, you know, my girl out of Notre Dame, Hannah Hidalgo,
mm-hmm.
right? A great freshman guard in Notre Dame. But a lot of these girls like, you know, Madison Booker, Cameron Brink, Aaliyah Edwards, right? You know, Kiki Efrien. You know, a lot of these girls, people aren't talking about them. They're not talking about Camila Cardoso, who is killing it as the senior center for South Carolina.
That's the headline game, Camila versus Angel.
You know.
That's what everybody's looking for because of that rivalry. And because of what she did to what's her name, Flauje? I can't pronounce these girls' name. Yeah. It's bad. Give me grace. I'm not good at pronouncing people's names. So I mean, but yeah, like you got
my girl, yeah, my girl out of UCLA, Lauren Betts. I'm trying to see the UCLA bracket over here. Yeah, that game tomorrow. You know, LSU and UCLA, that's going to be the matchup right there.
Yeah.
You know, because you got Lauren Betts for UCLA. And then it's going to be, you know, you got Camila on South Carolina, you know, which is going to be interesting if they, you know, how they get there, you know. But you've got great players on UCLA, right? But then you also got, you know, people don't talk about her enough, Anissa Morrow for LSU, because everybody talks about Angel Reese. You know, but it's – the problem is you need – I think a lot of people need to also redefine how they see their stars, because, again, you know, there's a lot of great players in the NCAA and the men's top. People just aren't watching.
Yeah, but
people just aren't watching.
That goes into kind of our next topic in a sense, like as far as the decline in men's basketball in a sense with college basketball, that kind of trickles down to like the All-Star game, like with people not wanting to watch the All-Star game or All-Star weekend as a whole, right? So with that, like my question to you, because we're now entering the next topic, Adam Silver saying that he wants to switch things up as far as the All-Star game, because he loved the progression and the interest between, you know, the women and the men as far as that 3-point showdown with Steph and Sabrina. Like, it was, everybody wanted to watch it. more than any of the other activities that were going on. So yeah. He was giving up ideas like probably including more men versus women type games, or the biggest idea that he had which I 100% agree with is with the dominance of Doncic and Joker and Bede and Shea, USA versus the world, because this has been a heavily debated topic. Like, do we have any more superstars in the USA to compete with the world? Is it now an international league now where they're taking over the NBA? Do we compete anymore? And that answer.
I love the idea.
You love it.
I love the idea, but it'll be abandoned once the USA gets embarrassed.
So you feel like they're going to get embarrassed?
So who's on Team USA?
I have no clue. Like, it's just because.
Right. No, let's look at this right now. Yeah. So right now, let's say your best international players, you got Luka starting at point guard.
Uh-huh. I don't even think
Jokic. He started. No, but
Shea Mike.
If I'm picking USA versus the world,
okay,
I'm starting Luka at the point.
Mm-hmm.
I have Jokic at the center position.
Mm-hmm.
You could have
Giannis.
Yeah, you could have Giannis at the four. You could rotate between Paolo Banchero, Alperen Sengun, and
Shea.
And Sabonis at your three.
Shea.
And then that leaves you two, right? That's Shea. You got Shea could be your backup point. But that, again, look at that. If you've got a three-person rotation at your small forward with Sengun, Sabonis, and Paolo Banchero.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Joker. You've got Giannis for the center position. Embiid for the center position. And then at your point guard spots, you've got Shea. You've got Luka Doncic. Let's see. Porzingis is probably in there. Siakam. Josh Giddey. You know, Wembanyama. Technically, Wiggins is an international player.
Technically, he's from Canada, you're right. Yeah.
Right. You know, Clint Capella is international. Jamal Murray is technically an international player. He's a Canadian player. Right, you still got Gobert as well, Franz Wagner, you know, Bogdanovich, DiVincenzo, you know, DeAndre Ayton. Like, who are you putting on the other side right now?
I've got Anthony Edwards, Kevin Durant, LeBron, of course, Steph Curry.
Okay.
Trying to think center wise. I don't know nobody center wise. It's crazy. Anthony Davis, Kawhi, Paul George.
I was trying to join the show, but you guys are boring already. I'm already falling asleep. I don't know what y'all talking about, but it's.
We're talking about USA versus the world in the All-Star game because Adam Silver's thinking about changing up the All-Star game to make it the international All-Stars versus.
Nobody want to see that.
Huh?
I don't want to see that.
I mean.
They can do old school versus new school.
What do you mean old school versus new school?
Like LeBron, Steph, KD, all them old guys who need to retire. Need to face off with the new guys. Did y'all talk about Draymond Green and how he's a straight embarrassment to his team? He made Steph Curry cry yesterday.
He made Steph Curry a demon last night too. Pause. Like kicking down chairs and knocking down threes and going down the aisle like this.
But nobody wants to talk about his behavior.
I don't reward bad behavior by mentioning it on air.
They just need to get rid of him at this point. He has to get out the league at this point. That's where I'm at with it.
But even if you have that team, look at the team that I just fielded. And I didn't even mention some players, right? I didn't even mention, you know, guys like Vujicic or Al Horford or Lauri Markkanen. You know, players like that could be there, right? You know, you have a great bench, right? You know, there was a kid for Indiana, Mathurin.
Okay.
He's an international player.
About Tyler Hansbro.
Carl Anthony Towns is technically international.
Yeah, he's Filipino.
Jalen Williams. He's Dominican.
Yeah, one of them. Some from there.
Your favorite former 76er, Thibel.
He's not going to be on no All-Stars. He's not going to be on no All-Star team.
I'm saying, though. But, like, when you think about that, when you think about the players that are international, Kyrie Irving's technically an international player.
Yes.
You know, Josh Giddey, Buddy Hield, DeAndre Ayton, Nurkic, you know, Embiid, Siakam.
It's an international league, but that's what I'm saying. That's why that's been the argument. Like, yo, do we stand a chance against the international all-stars if they were to go that route? Because, again, the top three players right now is Doncic, Giannis, and Joker. And they're all three international players.
Right. And now who was the number one pick? Victor Wembanyama, French.
Yeah. Shit, I forgot all about him. Yeah. Yo, the international all-stars, they would be stacked. You don't have much answers for a lot of the players on that team.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I like that.
You have a deep bench. You have a deep bench there. You have guys like Steven Adams on the bench. You have guys like, you know, like you said, Shea might be on the bench, coming off the bench. Clint Capella would be coming off the bench. You know, it's an interesting concept, and I think it would revitalize the All-Star game. But I also think the biggest problem with the All-Star game is it's just like nobody takes it seriously. I also think there should be some stakes in the All-Star game. There should be some stakes in the All-Star game.
What stakes are you talking about?
There should be something in the All-Star game that matters in the to the league. If it's, you know, winner of the All-Star game gets home court advantage in the NBA finals. Winner of the All-Star game gets, you know, I don't know. Like, they have to figure something out because they have to make it matter or get it out of the middle of the season.
I'm not subjective to USA versus the world. I also want to see the WNBA All-Stars versus the NBA All-Stars.
That would be great too.
I would tune in for that. Shine more light to the women All-Stars and put more eyes on that product, because again they're approaching their, you know, the end of the season where they're going to be renegotiating their TV deal and renegotiate that TV deal, get more money. There's more money for these great athletes, and you know, putting more money in their pocket, which they greatly deserve, because I'm not cool with them playing overseas in order to get a bag. I feel like that's unfair. Your highest paid player should not be making $250,000. It's just unacceptable. But Tay, do you got a tea time? Is she there? Tay, you there?
Y'all dragged on. Y'all wasted my only 15 minutes that I have to be on this damn show.
So is that a yeah, no? Is that a year or no?
Year or no.
No?
Yeah, sure, whatever. Yeah, sure, whatever.
Give it to a queen. I got it. Give it to a queen. Yeah, give it to a queen. I got it. Give it to a queen. I got it. Give it to a queen. I got it.
ladies and gentlemen, tonight is your late night installment of Tavia's Tea Time, where your girl T talks all comings here, there, and everywhere. Today, I want to talk about online thugs and the fact that, like, social media gives people the strength to say things about and to people that they wouldn't say to them personally, right? I come from an era that's so different that we didn't settle our beefs online. Like, if you felt the way about somebody, either you put up, you knuck if you buck, or you stand down. I feel like social media gives cowards a platform to talk shit to people who are really about that life. That's what I'm going to say about that. My second installment of Tea Time is everybody seeing what's going on with Diddy? And people are being like, yo, you know, he's a black man that people want to see go down and stuff like that. But why aren't we looking at the Nickelodeon dude? But we looking at R. Kelly and Bill Cosby. And my thing is, the way that people act about these sexual assault allegations, even against whomever, there's no doubt in my mind that they'd all be Nickelodeon parents. Because to play comparative politics when it comes to race in the face of people doing years and years allegations of sexual abuse, it's scary to me. My third thing on Tea Time is I don't understand what's everybody's obsession with Dreams and Nightmares. The song. Like, it's not even a song. It's an intro. It's so sad that you've had a career for 13 years and that's the only song that people know. That's weird. That's big weird. It's big weird.
Oh, shit.
Why are you going away?
Oh, man. Why?
Does anybody agree? And now I understand why Peter left it. He was rambling on for like.
Oh, man. I don't know why. Yeah. Something about Dreams and Nightmares. I knew it.
I can't do it.
Mind
you, I get hype when I hear the song too.
Oh man,
yo. I get hype when I hear the song too.
I saw your comment, right? And I was like,
I get hype.
Oh man, yo.
I get hype too. But
Dreams
like,
and Nightmares is this era's public service announcement, I guess. Like, you know how important that was to.
I can see that.
It's my time.
But you know what's so crazy? Those songs didn't come out too far apart from each other. What?
I don't know. I don't remember the time frame of it, but I know public service announcement was when I was in junior high school, going into high school. Dreams and Nightmares was when I got out of high school. But as far as brother love, I have my personal opinion.
And then everybody's just making it weird. People are just making it weird by saying, like, no Diddy when it comes to, like, homosexual, like, actions. And my thing is, you know when you should say no Diddy when it comes to bad business deals. Like, damn. Damn, I'm about to sign this contract for this job, you know, thinking I'm going to last there for longer than.
My bad, kids. Jesus Christ. Hello? Where you go? Tell you
she
this?
Was talking and then she cut out. I don't know what happened.
I know she was saying she don't agree with me. I personally say no brother love. But I'd cycle it to just bad behavior.
That's still too much to say.
Well, no brother love or no
dick. You know, and the thing is, it's like, yeah, all of it. It's just trash. Like, you know, my thing is the image of his sons getting arrested and he was nowhere to be found, that's crazy. Now, he fled.
They said he didn't flee. They said he was in Miami, pacing.
Pacing?
Yeah, he was at the airport pacing around. He was just walking around.
Nah, they said that he was on his private jet. But whatever they said Cuba Gooding Jr. did, he did that shit. I don't care what I'm saying.
You don't like Cuba Gooding Jr. either? Oh, my God.
No, any story I ever heard about him was all negative.
Yeah, same for Diddy for me, though. I never heard good stories about Diddy.
I've been in, you know, no comment.
I've been in rooms around him and people around him, and I've never heard good stories about him.
No comment.
Yeah, same here. Just upset. No comment. I don't not believe a lot of the stories that's going on. I feel bad for a lot of the people around him. Like, I don't know the facts behind the Young Miamis or I don't know that lady's name. I guess that's 50 Cent's son's mother. Yeah. I don't know too much about her, but to say that they're sex workers, I can't garner an opinion about that.
That's how it's talked about in the lawsuit. That's what they. Yeah. That's why he said that.
And 50 is just wild, yo. He is. So you just.
But
said,
he's been coming at Diddy for years, though.
Yeah, I know, but you just mentioned like cyberbullying and 50 is the king of that. He is killing everybody with that. Like, he is. I feel like he's leading the attack on Diddy. It's the crazy thing about
but
it.
But is it an attack or is it just a statements of truth? Because people get mad at me because I say a lot of truths a lot of times. The people, they get mad at the truth.
Yeah.
So is it bullying?
Have
or
you
is
seen
it what he deserves?
Have you seen
I don't think it's bullying. Especially if it's true.
To his child's mother, though?
If it's true, it's not bullying.
I just feel like to see the downfall and like to see all the negative that happens to a lot of these people that have fame, like Diddy or like you said, Cuba Gooding Jr., which we, again, I don't know too much stories about Cuba Gooding Jr. I try not to invest in that, but for them to mention, you know, they mentioned Meek in that. They mentioned so many other, they mentioned Stevie J. They hear Al B. Sure see, like, pretty much beg for his son to just come home because of all of this.
But you say all that now after this man done raised your son?
Look.
Like that to me, that's wild, emotional deadbeat dad behavior.
I mean,
yeah,
it's just
it's deadbeat dad behavior.
And then it's like to see what's the kid name? Well, not kid, the guy from That's So Raven. Why do they keep giving him a mic? I don't understand.
I'm kidding.
I'm like, why do they keep interviewing this guy? Like, I don't know what's going on. Like, mental. Oh, jeez, you don't want to say it's mental, but it comes off real mental, like really mentally depression. Like, it's something going on. What's his name? Orlando Brown. That's his name.
Yes, he definitely has mental issues.
But why do they keep interviewing him? This is what I'm not understanding. And then on top of that, you got Suge Knight throwing more salt to the flame. From prison, it just gets worse. I don't feel like Diddy has he can't even fight it. I feel like his descendants from the top is going to be talked about more than his ascension to the top. And I feel like, damn, he's really in the same boat as R. Kelly now.
I wouldn't go that far.
Sex workers, Tay?
Yeah, but the thing is, the R. Kelly thing was just so egregious. Like, we haven't begun to see the beginning of, we haven't even begun to see this. And I don't think it's going to reach those levels because hopefully people have learned from R. Kelly.
Well, they're talking about sex trafficking.
Well, sex trafficking has a million different reasons and a million different, like, explanations behind it.
I just know that's a vibe.
Anybody who's in a different, who you bring to a different state to have sex and pay for it, is considered sex trafficking once they claim sexual assault.
That's crazy, but that surviving Diddy tape is going to be wild. I can't wait to see that. That's gonna be crazy.
You never know. You might get a call.
No brother love.
Stop saying no brother. What does that even mean?
I'm playing as a joke.
Yeah, but say, what does no brother love mean? I want to know.
I'm not with none of the shenanigans. No brother love. I'm not going to no Diddy parties. I have not ever been to a Diddy party.
Yeah, well, it looks like, from the looks of it, there won't be anymore.
Damn, bro.
Him and R. Kelly be like, twin, where have you been?
Pete kind of sad because that was his 90s childhood. It's all crashing down right now for him. He don't feel the same no more. He was wearing the shiny suit.
We all were though.
I know you was wearing that shiny suit.
We all were though.
Nah, I feel like, you know, like I'm of the mindset that if you're rich, famous, popular, stuff like that, like if you're in the public eyes and those things, you've done some unsavory things. There is very rarely anybody who exists in the public spheres of acting or music or things like that that have not done things that are beyond the realm of moral, regular morals and ethics and standards. But then again, they live by a different set of rules. And that's the thing. They live by a different set of rules. You know, and it is what it is. So, you know, I just, you know, with Diddy, it's like, hey, the bill comes due. If this is true, then the bill comes due, right? It's just sad that so many people had to get hurt and had to deal with all this, and until something was done, like, you know, that's where the bigger issue is. It's like all of these things fall under the radar because people have fame and money and power and, you know, the ability to do what they want to do because they live by different rules and are treated under different rules. You know, with that whole Nickelodeon thing that came out, it was just like, hey, like, I think the biggest thing for me is, like, obviously I have issues with the adults that were involved. But my bigger issue is, like, I hate comparative politics in the sense of, like, I'm going to judge what happened in 1995 based on 2024 standards. Like, we've learned things in 2024 that we are like, okay, that's not good to do, and that's not good to do, and that's not good to do. We weren't exactly having that thought pattern or thinking those things or talking about those things back in 1994.
Yeah, but having sex with 13-year-olds, I'm pretty sure in 1995 and 2025 and 2075, that's still gonna
That's why I said the adults involved in that, I think that's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about, like,
predatory behavior.
They were talking about, like, well, when you look back at the scene, like, they were talking about a scene where a kid has, like, an allergic reaction to something, and then he, like, sneezes, and it's this big snaz, this big thing of snot that lands on this woman's face in the scene. And they're like, so it's basically a you-know-what shot joke for kids. And I'm like, No. Okay, but you're looking at it from an adult mindset in 2024. Like, nobody that was watching that in 1995 was sitting there saying, oh, well, that's a this joke or that's a this. And it's like, that's what I mean by the comparative stuff. Like, we sit here and we want to judge things that happen. If that were the case, listen, if that were the case, take Three's Company off the air, take I Love Lucy off the air, take Different Strokes off the air, take A Different World off the air, take all these shows that we grew up watching off the air, because we could sit here with the lens of 2024 and look at something from the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, the 60s, the 50s, and find something that was wrong with it. Hell, take The Honeymooners off the air. Every New Year's Eve, they do a marathon. I love it. I watched it with my mother for years. Take it off the air. Why? Because it talks about a man who openly speaks about abusing, physically abusing his wife, even though he never hits her. But he alludes to it. Like, come on now.
No, I get it. I understand it. I mean, I didn't watch the documentary, so I don't really necessarily know what was said. I've heard, like, some clips of it. A lot of it sound like it was more like grooming. I didn't know if he fit, if any, I don't know if it's one person or if it's three or two. I don't really know. But from what I'm heard, it sounded like grooming and inappropriate.
It was alluded that he got Amanda Bynes pregnant at 13.
Whoa.
Yeah.
When we're saying he, are we talking about the pickle guy?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Because I know that they were talking about the pickle guy. I don't know if that's his name. That's his name.
Well, Dan Schneider is the guy who was behind, the guy who created all that. He created Drake and Josh, all that stuff. He discovered Amanda. He was the big fat guy. Like, we watched all that. He was always the big fat guy that played the producer backstage.
And he off a Good Burger.
Yeah. Okay, no. Wasn't yeah, no, he was no, no
he was an actor.
You sure? I could have sworn he played like the manager from Good Burger, right?
No, I know who you're talking about. No, that guy was an actor.
Yeah, no. But it looks similar, but yeah, but he would always be like, when you looked at when you would watch all that, he'd always be the guy backstage that would always like make fun of himself and stuff like that, and he, you know, all this other stuff.
Wait, did he touch Keenan and Kel?
No, there's no.
Okay.
But they did ask Keenan Thompson about all the allegations, and I think he didn't really want to step into it with it. But, you know, there's always more to meet the eye.
I mean, I don't really know too much. Hold up. Oh, he was in Good Burger. So it's the same guy. It's the same guy.
Oh, yeah, he was.
Yeah. Oh, word?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen him on the Amanda show a couple times. I'm like,
why? Yeah, he's the owner and manager of Good Burger, yeah.
So, all right. So, fat white guy.
Yeah.
I could have sworn he was talking about the pickle dude. Because that's the one
that's
know.
The dude that got, that's the dude that molested Drake.
Oh, he did something with Drake.
Yeah, that's the his name is Brian Peck. He was pickle guy on all that and stuff like that. But he was also a dialogue coach for Mad Shows, and he was picked up for a litany of charges. You know, but it was, you know, he molested Drake. You know, and oddly enough, people get on Josh. Ooh.
Who allegedly impregnated? Was it Jamie Lynn?
There's rumors with Dan Schneider. There's a lot of rumor and innuendo around Dan Schneider because of it. Wow. You know, but
I guess I gotta watch this documentary. I don't know if I could stomach watching it.
But the big thing is, I've watched it the first three episodes. Like, I'm not surprised by anything that said. I do think a lot of it is. There's a lot of it that's kind of like, again, that comparative, like, oh, we're going to sit here and judge a sketch that was on in 1995 by 2024 standards, and we're going to look at it at the eyes of an adult versus the eyes of a kid. The stuff that you hear about what happened in the workplace and stuff like that, like Dan Schneider being a toxic boss and, you know, gender discrimination and stuff like that, is your basic run-of-the-mill bullshit politics of backstage and Hollywood bullshit.
It's the 90s.
Now, did he knowingly hire pedophiles? Nobody knows. Brian Peck was there before Dan Schneider got there. And he'd been working in Hollywood before Dan Schneider got to Nickelodeon. But, you know, did he knowingly hire, you know, pedophiles? No one can really prove or deny that. Did he know about anything that was going on? No one can prove or deny that. Did he do anything? There are allegations, but there's no proof or, you know, or denial that he actually did anything himself.
No, you know, the crazy thing is, like, the hit on Amanda Bynes thing, it kind of explains the behavior or why she's had mental depression in her adult years. That's crazy. I don't know. It's like I've been real, like, standoffish with these documentaries. Like, I even stumbled across the Wendy Williams documentary thing, and that rubbed me all the way wrong. I just couldn't, like, I'm just like, I'm not a Wendy Williams fan. My mom was, like, the craziest Wendy Williams fan. So to watch that and to see how she was exploited, that rubbed me the wrong way. So it's like I'm real hit and miss with these documentaries. So it's like I don't know if I'm going to have the stomach to watch the Nickelodeon documentary, because I grew up watching Nickelodeon. So take us out, Pete. This is ending it out gloomy. It's crazy.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know, while we may have started with two, all four members of the Eurosports show ended the night with us. Thanks to the Queen for making time to be with us. We know she's dealing with a lot right now going on her plate. Thank you for making time to be with us tonight.
No, Matt coming in, y'all,
on CP time here nonetheless. For the soul of R&B, Big Baby, I am the voice of a generation, Pete Rosato. We will see you next time right here on the Eurosports show.